as what you need cleaned up. You don't think it would bring back terrible memories?
One can but ask.
How does one go about it? As Mrs. Barnes explained the system, Sally came in with tea for four. Mrs. Turnbull took on the task of pouring. Daisy handed round cups and saucers before settling herself with a plateful of watercress sandwiches.
Mrs. Fletcher, said the rector's wife, I want to thank you for shepherding Jeremy about London this afternoon.
Daisy couldn't very well admit she'd been motivated as much by curiosity as any benevolent impulse, the latter in any case being directed towards Vera, not the rector. She muttered something deprecatory.
Whatever he found out, Mrs. Turnbull went on, has disturbed him greatly. He can't make up his mind what to do about whatever it is.
If Daisy correctly understood the situation, the rector had only two choices. He could confront Cartwright himself, or he could consult the Board of Governors and make them share the dirty work. For either alternative, he'd have to work out how to present his case persuasively. But persuasion should be a clergyman's forte.
I hope he decides soon,
she said, thinking of the uncomfortable position poor Vera was in.
It's something to do with Miss Layton, I take it, as you and Jeremy laid your plans when she came to consult him.
Mrs. Turnbull's tone was non-committal, but Daisy realized she was being genteelly pumped. It was a great relief to Vera to be able to talk to Mr. Turnbull, she said. His sympathy gave her hope.
Hope of what? She didn't specify.
Vera's much more cheerful since seeing the rector, Isabel confirmed. And I'm much more cheerful since Mrs. Barnes has told me how to hire workers to clean the cellar. Daisy, pass those Shrewsbury biscuits, would you? Mrs. Turnbull offered refills of tea. Daisy took a Bakewell tart and ate a bite of the almond paste-topped pastry before succumbing to a different kind of temptation.
Did you know the Greys?
Not well.
Mrs. Barnes exchanged a glance with Mrs. Turnbull.
At least, Albert Gray and Ruth, his first wife, were sociable enough. But after she died, he withdrew, rather, stopped entertaining, and refused most invitations. As his doctor, my husband must have seen more of him than I did.
We were all glad when he remarried, though a woman so many years his junior. Younger than his son, in fact. Well, that was none of our business, of course.
When was that? 2 or 3 years ago?
Nearer 4, said the rector's wife. They didn't get married at St. Mary's. A registry office in London, I believe.
Daisy instantly felt guilty for having done the same. Chiefly to dodge the worst of her Dowager Viscountess mother's recriminations for marrying a middle-class policeman.
Judith Gray wasn't at all interested in mixing with local people, Mrs. Barnes elaborated. Not even the younger crowd. She has friends in London, and it's so quick and easy to get into town from here.
I'm sure it was her London friends who gave her the idea of moving to the south of France, put in Mrs. Turnbull. A visit to Paris, then off to stay with friends in a villa on the Côte d'Azur until she finds a place to buy. Or so rumour has it.
Daisy was dying to ask whether rumour ever spoke of the possibility of Judith Gray having deliberately hastened her husband's end. Assuming Dr. Barnes had been his doctor, Mrs. Barnes would surely be aware of any such insinuation. Such a query would be crass, however, much worse than just asking whether they had been acquainted with Mrs. Gray.
How neatly they had all avoided mentioning that the subject of their gossip had more than likely been murdered. Mrs. Turnbull regarded the scant remains of their tea with a sigh. "What an excellent tea the Saracen's Head does, and how lucky I come here rarely. I must be going. Jeremy will be wondering where I've got to." With much goodwill expressed, the older ladies prepared to depart. Scarves were knotted, hats straightened, gloves donned, handbags gathered. As they moved towards the door, Sally entered.
"Are you going? I'm ever so sorry I didn't come and ask if you want more hot water or anything else. We've been that busy. I've been run off my feet."
"We had all we needed, thank you, Sally," said Mrs. Barnes. "And more," Mrs. Turnbull added ruefully. Sally saw them out, then turned back to Daisy and Isabel and started collecting the tea things.
"They're nice ladies, aren't they? But we got a right lot of ghouls in the dining room, asking nosy questions about you ladies, miss. You and Miss Layton and Miss Chandler. And you, Mrs. Fletcher, and the Chief Inspector."
"What did you tell them?" Daisy asked.
"Not a blinking thing, madam. Nor I wouldn't have, if I'd got anything to tell."
"I'm sure you do. So thank you for keeping quiet."
"Happy to oblige, madam."
Grinning, she picked up the tray and left them.
"She must have enjoyed foiling the busybodies," said Isabel, adding ruefully, "Is that why Mrs. Barnes and Mrs. Turnbull were so pleasant? Just to persuade us to pass on the details?"
"I don't think so, though it was a bit of a fencing match at times. At least, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have asked any awkward direct questions. Sally's pretty sharp, and she called them nice. Remember, last night Mrs. Barnes met Willie and Mrs. Turnbull met Vera. They realized they couldn't possibly be murderers, so they wanted to meet you."
"To vet me."
"Don't we all vet new acquaintances?"
"True. Then you believe they really will call, once we've got things straightened out?"
"Definitely. And with the doctor's wife and the rector's wife both on calling terms, the rest will soon come round."
"I expect so."
Isabel gave a sigh of satisfaction.
"I must say, it'd be nice if people smiled and said good morning when I go shopping. Escape from Coventry. Not that I've ever been to Coventry. I don't suppose it's any worse than Huddersfield."
Daisy laughed. "I couldn't say. I've never been to either. Now, let me tell you what the rector and I found out, and then I'm going to lie down for a while, if you won't think it frightfully rude."
"You must be exhausted, Daisy. You've been dashing about as if you weren't still convalescent."
"I do feel a bit limp. It was worth it, though. Listen." She described the visits to the two schools. "So the rector has no reason to doubt Vera's story, and Cartwright hasn't a leg to stand on. I'm off. Tell Vera when you see her, if the rector hasn't."
"I will, and I can't thank you enough."
"Please don't. I'll see you later." On her way upstairs, Daisy met Vera coming down. She looked tired, as who wouldn't after a day in a classroom full of small children, but as if a burden had fallen from her back.
"Daisy, I'm..."
"Dying for your tea, I'm sure. Izzy's in the parlour. I'll see you later." With a wave, Daisy escaped and trudged on up the stairs. She was pleased with her day's work. Vera's problem was well on the way to being solved, and the prospects for an end to Isabel's isolation looked good. What was more, she could confirm to Alec and D.I. Underwood that Cartwright was a ladies' man, with a tendency towards violence. He had physically assaulted three women. Had he attempted the same trick with Mrs. Gray?
Unlike the three junior teachers, she would have had no reason to keep quiet, so he'd have felt he had to silence her. Alternatively, Miss Mason's young man was mistaken, and Cartwright and Mrs. Gray actually were having an affair. She might somehow have found out about his behaviour with the others, leading to a quarrel. Unless she was having an affair with Vaughan. By this point in her musings, Daisy had kicked off her shoes, put her feet up on the bed, and leaned back against the pillows. She fell asleep. 20. Daisy awoke, feeling much refreshed. With more than enough time to wash and change before dinner, she stayed put, watching, in a detached way, the curtains flap in a determined breeze blowing through the part-open window. Less than 4 inches is a draught, her nurse had always said. More than 4 inches is fresh air. She was thinking drowsily about getting up when Alec came in.
Daisy, are you all right?
He asked in alarm. Perfectly all right, darling. She sat up. Why shouldn't I be?
It's not like you to take a nap between tea and dinner.
I'm still sort of convalescent, according to Isabel, at any rate. Besides, I've had a busy day.
So I've heard.
Oh, blast. Have you been talking to the rector? I wanted to tell you myself.
No, he was out when we called, as was his wife.
Must have been tea time. She joined us for tea, Izzy and me. The doctor's wife, too. It's no good asking either of them about Mrs. Gray, though. They barely knew her. Daisy passed on what the two had said.
Thanks. That's much the impression we've been getting from everyone. But what I really want to know is what the dickens you and the rector were up to.
Mr. Turnbull had some questions he wanted to ask Vera's two predecessors at the school. I offered to drive him, so that he wouldn't have to work out the underground, and buses, and so on.
Nothing to do with the case, then?
Just some information he hoped would help Vera, Daisy added cautiously. But we did come across something that might help you, too.
Oh, yes?
You needn't sound so sceptical.
You must admit, it's a bit odd that the rector's quest to help Miss Layton just happened to result in you finding evidence for the police.
Serendipity. Well, I did hope. The very vaguest of hopes.
Otherwise, no doubt, you wouldn't have offered Mr. Turnbull your services as chauffeur.
But so vague, I was sure it wouldn't count as interfering. You were going to interview Mr. Cartwright, weren't you? After he barged in on you, and Underwood, and the superintendent.
Of course. Though we were pretty certain his outburst was irrelevant, as the victim couldn't have told lies regarding an investigation that didn't start till long after she died.
So you wouldn't press him too hard? Have you seen him already?
Underwood sent someone to get a statement.
Alec considered for a moment.
I can't see any reason not to tell you. Cartwright said he'd had one too many whiskies, and thought he saw his wife going into the snug to complain to the landlord about letting him run up a bill he couldn't afford. His wife confirms that he spends far too much on drink, but swears she wouldn't demean herself by speaking to a common publican.
At that point, Sally had left, and I was the only woman in the snug. Does she look at all like Sally or me?
I wonder if... The constable who called on her described her as a sour-faced shrew with a bad perm.
Darling, really? It's a clever story, though. It puts him in a bad light, so you wouldn't be inclined to investigate any further.
All right. What did you discover?
He never misses an excuse to cane or rap the knuckles of the unfortunate children he's supposed to teach.
Many schoolmasters do that, and schoolmistresses too.
Many don't. At the least, it shows he's not averse to violence. Also, he's a ladies' man, giving to forcing unwanted attentions on defenceless females.
Is he now? Including Miss Layton, I presume.
You'll have to ask her, and the others.
Others? Miss Sutcliffe and Miss Chandler?
I wouldn't call them defenceless, would you?
Who, then?
I can't tell you that. Ask the rector. But Mrs. Gray could have been one of those he approached. Perhaps he was rougher with her than he dared to be in the schoolroom, and she fought him. Or perhaps he was actually her lover, and they quarrelled.
Pure speculation.
Alex scoffed automatically. But he looked thoughtful. Daisy let him think for a moment, then went on. Or perhaps the sour-faced shrew found out about their affair and attacked Mrs. Gray. He groaned.
I can't dismiss any of your wild guesses out of hand. You'd better change your clothes if you want any dinner.
Are you insinuating that I'm a mess?
Yes, love. Stating, rather than insinuating. Better than being sour-faced, but you look exactly as if you've been sleeping in that dress. As you have.
This Daisy could not deny, so she let the dress be crushed a little more in his arms, and they went down late to dinner. Willie, Vera, and Isabel were already on the main course, so Daisy and Alec waved, but didn't join them. The room was packed, but Sally had saved a table for the Fletchers. She brought steaming bowls of soup.
Mulligatawny, I hope you like it. Then there's veal and ham pie, or Dover sole. I heard you went and saw Auntie May this afternoon, Mr. Fletcher. Did she snap your head off?
Alec smiled at her.
I have a tough head, don't worry. Daisy, what will you have?
The sole, if it's really fresh.
I wouldn't offer it to you, Mrs. Fletcher, if it wasn't. Come straight from Billingsgate this very morning. On ice all the way.
Alec chose the pie. Sally left, and Daisy asked,
What's she like?
Mrs. Hedger. I saw her briefly the first time I went to Cherry Trees. She was just leaving. Typically, he tossed the question back.
What did you think of her?
Morose. Suspicious by nature. That's just from her looks. And I saw her only in passing. I didn't chat with her. She didn't look as if she wanted to be sociable. I can't comment on what Isabel said about her being hard-working, but I can well believe she's obstinate.
Obstinate, obdurate, and obstructive. Apparently my accent isn't posh enough to impress her. She just kept repeating that her job is cleaning, not spying on her ladies. Nor paying attention to their looks or their comings and goings. She doesn't hold with carryings on, and wouldn't have stood for anything of the sort.
She doesn't live in, so that doesn't mean much. When did she last see Mrs. Gray?
She can't remember. She pays no attention to her lady's comings and goings.
I'd expect her to remember when she was last paid.
I dare say she does, and is just being difficult.
Perhaps Mrs. Gray gave her a farewell bonus. She refused to attempt to identify the body, I take it?
Her job is cleaning, and one lady looks much the same as another.
Daisy laughed. Oh dear, what a pity she isn't one of those chars to whom their employers' lives are of all-absorbing interest. What about Vaughan?
He was out of the office all day, showing houses, inspecting houses, dealing with tenants of houses the agency manages.
Alec shrugged.
Whatever house agents do. Underwood made an appointment to see him tomorrow, in case we can't catch him this evening. Miss Chandler hasn't dropped any further hints about him.
Never a murmur. He must have spent quite some time with Mrs. Gray, going over the house and showing it to prospective buyers. Surely ought to be able to identify her, even if they weren't having an affair. Are you any closer to proving it's her body?
Not to proving, but the odds are improving.
They had finished the mulligatawny soup. Tasty, but a bit heavy on the curry powder. Sally brought the main course.
Mr. Piper's just come from the police station, sir, and he'd like a word when you can. I'm giving him his supper in the kitchen. He said he'd rather.
Was that a touch of pink on her cheeks? Daisy wasn't sure. The waitress was a very self-possessed young woman.
That's kind of you, Daisy said.
Did the pinkness intensify?
Tell Piper I'll be with him as soon as I've finished eating.
Alec sounded morose.
Thanks.
Mr. Whitford says you can use the snug again, sir, if you need to. You're bringing in a lot of new customers.
Sally whisked off to serve another diner.
Were you expecting the rest of the evening off, darling?
Not really. I just hoped to dine in peace. Did I tell you Tom Tring is coming down to Beaconsfield? He may be here already.
But he retired.
He's missing the job. I happened to run into him at the yard, chatting with an old crony. He asked after you and the children, of course. Then he wanted to know what I was up to. I told him my presence on this case was strictly, officially unofficial. Naturally, he immediately guessed that you were involved.
Darling, she protested.
So we hatched a plot whereby he would go undercover, even more unofficially.
His missus won't appreciate that a bit.
She's coming too, I hope. Just a city couple taking a few days' holiday in the country. They'll stay elsewhere, and he'll patronise the public bars. Here and elsewhere, keeping his ears open.
I'm sure his pub crawling will reconcile Mrs. Tring to the business, Daisy said ironically.
We'll see. If you happen to come face to face with her or Tom, pretend you don't know them.
I'll try. I suppose there's no way you can introduce him to Sally's Auntie May. I bet he'd get her talking.
Probably. That's a good idea, if I can come up with a way to get them together.
I'll try too. Alec's face expressed severe misgivings.
Daisy, you are absolutely not to...
Oh, I won't try to bring them together, darling. Just think of a way for Tom to do it himself.
If you come up with a suggestion, don't approach.
You've already told me not to show I know them. I presume you have a way to contact him in secret. Signs and passwords. Leave a message in the Hollow Oak at midnight. This is beginning to sound like a children's adventure story. Alec grimaced.
For pity's sake, don't say that to Underwood.
Does he know about Tom?
No. If Tom comes up with anything useful, I'll find a way to feed it to the inspector without letting on where it came from. I'd better skip pudding and go and see what Ernie wants. I may very well end up back at the police station, so don't wait up for me.
He rose, bent to kiss Daisy's cheek, and departed in the direction of the kitchen. Half the people in the room stared at Daisy. Sally hurried over to her.
Would you like me to serve your afters in the parlour, madam? Miss Sutcliffe and Miss Chandler are having their coffee in there.
Yes, please, Sally, if it won't be too much trouble.
Not a bit of it, madam. It's treacle tart tonight, or plum compote.
In a whisper, she added,
That's Coke's fancy name for bottled plums.
Daisy opted for the plums and made her way to the ladies' parlour. A stout, elderly woman and a younger one, who addressed her as Mama, had taken the sofa by the fire. They displayed no interest in Willie and Isabel, so Daisy guessed they were not locals. She joined her friends.
"Where's Vera?"
she asked in a low voice. "There was a note for her from the rector," said Isabel. "She went to see him."
"By herself?"
"By herself," Willie confirmed. "She's a changed woman."
"Thanks to you, Daisy."
"Oh, nonsense.
You went with her to see Mr. Turnbull. You went with Mr. Turnbull to see the other teachers."
"And now," Isabel said, "if you've recovered from your strenuous day, I'm hoping to persuade you to come with me to talk Mrs. Hedger into cleaning the cellar."
"Me? Why not Willie?"
Sally said her aunt is impressed by posh accents.
"Willie has a posh accent."
"Not any longer. I used to when we were at school, but it didn't survive a few years in Huddersfield. When I listen for it, I can hear odds and ends of Yorkshire creeping in," Daisy admitted. She didn't bother to tell them Alec had had no luck at all with Mrs. Hedger. He spoke the King's English as well as anyone, but her own voice, though not as acutely upper-class as Lucy's, she hoped, definitely retained the timbre of her upbringing. And she was quite good at putting on her mother's almost majestic hauteur when it seemed called for.
"Never mind," said Isabel. "You must be shattered after all your running around."
"Not really. I had a good snooze before dinner. All the same, couldn't we put it off till the morning?"
"I'd rather not. Mrs. Hedger will be off early to whoever she works for Tuesdays. And if I have to go to the Labour Exchange, Mrs. Barnes says it's better to get there early, before the most respectable workers are snapped up. It's not far. Her cottage is just off the Wickham Road."
"All right, I'll go with you."
Willie laughed. "Confess, Daisy, you're dying to meet her."
"Not dying, but I must say, I'm curious to find out if she's really as impossible as I've heard."
"What's up?"
Alec asked as he and Ernie Piper stepped out into the rain and walked briskly towards the police station.
"New information?"
"Not exactly, Chief. Nothing new. Just putting things together from statements taken this evening and the ones that came in earlier. And Mr. Underwood wants to talk to you about who interviews who tomorrow."
"It sounds as if I'm going to be glad I decided to drive down."
They turned in at the door beneath the blue lamp. As they entered the room, Underwood stood.
"Thank you for coming back, sir. I'm sorry to disturb your evening."
"Comes with the job, doesn't it?"
He tried not to sound grumpy. The poor bastard wasn't married, and very likely had nothing better to do with his evening than pore over his case, though no need for haste was apparent. The trail had been cold before the starting point was discovered. Alec sat down. Ernie went to the desk and produced from his pocket a wax paper-wrapped packet.
"Veal and ham pie, sir. Miss Hedger put it up for you. She said all you had for supper yesterday was pickled onions and crisps."
"And a couple of Scotch eggs. But it's very thoughtful of her. Please give her my thanks."
"I will."
"And what can I do for you, Mr. Underwood?"
Alec asked, suppressing his impatience over these courtesies. He'd gone without dinner often enough to know how much it was appreciated if it turned up unexpectedly. While waiting for Underwood to finish his mouthful, Alec debated internally whether to tell him about Daisy's unsanctioned outing with the rector. The inspector was bound to find out, if he hadn't already. Better to get it over with. But perhaps he could keep Daisy out of it.
"While you're eating, let me tell you what I've just heard. It seems the rector has spoken to three young women, unknown to each other, all of whom describe Cartwright as a ladies' man, giving to pressing his attentions where they're not wanted.
Miss Layton told you?
No, and my source refused to give names. Miss Layton's a fair bet, though.
Dead cert. That sort of bully always picks on those in a position of weakness.
Which makes an attempt on Mrs. Gray's virtue less likely, however.
True, Underwood admitted reluctantly. It calls for a second interview, though, with a bit more to go on than his story and his wife's. And, of course, I'll have to talk to the rector.
And Miss Layton.
After we found out what the rector has to say, and after school's out.
Alec nodded.
What else is on the agenda?
Your sergeant here has turned up a couple of points that need looking into. Three of the neighbours have mentioned seeing a black closed saloon car parked outside Cherry Trees several times in the past few months, and at least once in the last fortnight. And a couple who take a stroll every evening have twice seen a similar car drive up the street, pause outside Cherry Trees, and then drive on quite fast. The man thinks it was a Jowett.
They noticed it because of your behaviour, Chief, but didn't think to mention it until they were asked specifically about a car of that appearance.
No license plate number, I suppose.
The letters BH, which is Bucks. No surprise. They contradict each other on the numbers.
Too much to hope for, said Underwood. It's pretty good luck to get that much, considering the high hedges. Not the sort of street where every neighbour knows everyone else's doings.
I haven't actually seen the street or house yet, Ernie reminded them.
Nor you have, Sergeant. You'd best take a walk over there first thing tomorrow, so that Miss Sutcliffe can get on with the cleaning. You've read the reports. Take a look round, see if you think we've missed anything. Then you can go and show the rings to Mr. Ainsley.
The rings?
Alec exclaimed.
Mrs. Gray's rings?
Underwood grinned.
Who else's? They were delivered by a motorcycle officer while you were at dinner.
From an envelope, he shook out onto the desktop a plain gold wedding band and a rather flashy ruby ring. Picking up his piece of pie, he took a large bite. Alec reached for the rings, but held back.
They've been checked for dabs. And cleaned.
His mouth full once again, the inspector nodded. The rings smelled faintly of formalin. Inside the band were engraved initials, APG and JJG.
Albert Gray and Judith Gray. What were their middle names?
Albert Peter and Judith Jane, Ernie said instantly.
Not much doubt there. And the ruby is distinctive, in the heart-shaped setting, with those diamond chips.
Underwood swallowed his mouthful.
Not ruby. It's paste. Well, he was known as a skinflint. Mr. Ainsley should be able to make a positive identification of the ring, don't you think?
Oh, yes. Which means we're close to certainty on the identity of the deceased. Did they say what killed her?
Broken neck, as far as they can tell. Dislocated vertebrae caused by a fall. The doc is pretty sure it wasn't caused post-mortem. And the...
He looked down at the top paper of the pile in front of him.
The hyoid bone is intact, so no strangulation. He thinks the back of the head may have been bruised, but probably from the fall. Not severely enough to suggest she'd been hit. No bone damage, at least. And that's about all he's willing to say, because of the condition of the body. The worst is, it's impossible to clean up her face to make her recognizable.
Damn. Time of death.
Still 2 to 4 weeks. Probably the middle of that range. I'll have Pennycook follow up with all the most promising neighbours,
See if he can dig out anything the uniformed men missed. He can man the station here while you run your errand, Sergeant. Then you'll take over here while he does his part.
Yes, sir.
First thing, though, catch the ladies at breakfast before the two of them go to work. Ask if any of them ever noticed a vehicle like the one reported. If that's all right with you, Chief Inspector.
We're at your disposition, Mr. Underwood. What's on the agenda for me?
I wondered if you'd happen to have any acquaintances at the Foreign Office. I'd very much like to know the Stepson's whereabouts in the past couple of months. Also, this friend who inherits the pearls has to be run to earth, and her address is in London.
As it happens,
Alex said dryly,
a friend of mine from Manchester University managed to squeeze through the swarms of Oxbridge men into a position at the FO. I expect he'll be able and willing to help. Anything else to be done while I'm in town?
Not that I can think of. I don't suppose Mrs. Fletcher would like to go with you.
And stay there? I'll put it to her, but I doubt it. She seems to be comfortably settled at the Saracen's Head, and determined to support her friends, though she might pop up for a few hours to see the twins.
Ah, well. At least Underwood apparently didn't delude himself that Alec was able to control Daisy's movements. Myself, I'm going to start in High Wycombe. I'll send someone up to the county offices in Aylesbury to get a list of owners of cars with the BH registration. You never know. If it's not too long, it may be useful. Then I'll call on Mr. Butterworth, the lady's solicitor. And what's his name? Miss Chandler's boss?
Mr. Davis, sir, Ernie put in.
Thank you, Sergeant. And see if I can catch Vaughan at his office. If not, I'll talk to his boss and set up an appointment.
Languages, in the High Street.
Then back here to have a word with the rector. Depending on what he has to say, I may ask you to come with me, Sergeant, to see Cartwright. Depends on the time, too. I won't fetch him out of his classroom if he turns out not to be a serious suspect. Have I covered everything?
It should clear the ground nicely, said Alec, which is about the best we can hope for at this stage, considering how little we have to go on.
One thing, sir. Ernie hesitated. It's not strictly relevant, but it's kind of a loose end you might want to tie up.
What's that, Mr. Piper? Go ahead.
Well, Miss Hedger told me there's a rumour Mrs. Grey did away with the old man. There's likely nothing in it, and even if it's true, it wouldn't have a direct effect on finding who killed her. Unless... His voice trailed off uncertainly.
Spit it out, man, Underwood encouraged him.
It's pure speculation, sir, as the chief would say. But supposing her stepson guessed she'd murdered his dad.
Or came home for his funeral and heard the rumour. You'd better ask where he was at that time too, Mr. Fletcher. April, wasn't it?
He died on the 24th of April, sir, and was buried on the 28th.
Not much time to return to England from the farthest reaches of empire,
Alec observed.
But a friend who attended the funeral and heard the rumour could have passed it on in a letter. In any case, I'll check the dates.
Because, said Underwood, it would give him a whopping great motive, on top of the money, for doing in his stepmother.
21. Umbrellas raised, Daisy and Isabel made their way along the Wycombe Road. They passed the fire engine house, then turned off into a narrow, muddy alley. Sally had told them her aunt's cottage was the fourth on the right. The drizzle, scarcely pierced by the lamp on the far side of the main street, made it difficult to tell one tiny cottage from the next.
Lath and plaster, ancient and ramshackle, they opened directly onto the mud. At one front door, a pale paving stone caught a glimmer of light. One resident, at least, had made an effort to prevent the muck from being tracked in. "That will be it," Isabel guessed. Daisy stood back, peering, and counted. "Yes, that's the fourth. It seems to be completely dark, though. She probably goes to bed early." Isabel, closer, said, "No, there's an oil lamp, or a candle burning downstairs. I can just make it out through the curtain. Come on." Failing a door knocker, she used her hand. Her glove muffled the sound, so she took it off and rapped with bare knuckles. After a moment, a suspicious voice asked,
"Who's there?"
"It's Miss Sutcliffe, Mrs. Hedger."
"What do you want, miss? Disturbing a poor old hard-working woman this time of night."
Despite her complaining words, her voice was flat. "You didn't work today," Isabel pointed out. "I promised to pay you anyway, so I brought your money."
"Devious," Daisy murmured, "and clever."
The door creaked open. Mrs. Hedger, a brightly multicoloured shawl over her head and swathed round her shoulders, appeared with her cupped hand already held out. Her back to a dim oil lamp, her face was shadowed. Isabel reached into her coat pocket and took out a purse.
"It's too dark out here to see to count."
She stepped forward so that the charwoman had to retreat. Daisy followed them in. The room was tiny and very clean, from the brick floor to the shabby wooden rocking chair, the whitewashed walls, the mantelpiece above the meager fire, and the tarnished looking glass above the mantelpiece. Coins clinked into the waiting palm.
"Also," said Isabel, "I wanted to talk to you about earning some extra cash."
Mrs. Hedger was staring at Daisy.
"Who's she?"
"A friend. She walked with me for company. No doubt you've heard what happened at Cherry Trees. There's some cleaning needed, and I can't pretend it won't be."
"No!"
Her vehemence was so much at odds with her usual surly reticence as to startle Daisy.
"Not that I haven't laid out a corpse or two in my time, but her. No, I won't do it, and that's flat."
"The body's not there any longer," Isabel said coaxingly. "The police removed it. It's just that it's left rather a nasty mess, or so I'm told. I'd pay extra, of course."
"Not for nothing, I won't."
Daisy didn't blame her a bit, but she said in her mother's tones of utmost displeasure, "You may regret disobliging the next time Miss Sutcliffe has a job to be done for extra pay." Mrs. Hedger was unmoved.
"I've said all I has to say, miss, and I'll thank you to leave me in peace, or be in Wednesday. Same as usual, to do my usual."
"That depends on the police," said Isabel. "I'll let you know. Good night." They walked in silence to the end of the alley. Daisy was piqued by her failure, but she laughed. "It would seem my voice isn't posh enough."
"It was worth a try.
Perhaps I'd have had more success as myself, not my mother."
"Never mind. I didn't really expect her to agree, even if she has laid out a corpse or two. I just hope I can find someone willing at the labour exchange."
"You'd better check with Underwood before you hire someone."
"Oh, yes. I wonder...
There's the church clock. 9:30. He'll have gone home by now." "Don't be so sure. The police work all hours on an investigation like this. Though this case is rather different, of course. They're usually in a hurry to find clues before they disappear. But this time, if they were going to disappear, they'll be long gone by now. I might as well pop into the police station anyway. The Saracen's Head first. Alec may be there, or Underwood himself, and able to give you an answer. It's a very unsettled life, isn't it? I never know whether Alec will be home for dinner. He's sent all over the country, though. I imagine Underwood rarely has to leave the county. What does Alec think of him? He hasn't told me directly, but judging by how well they're working together, I guess he respects his competence. That's good. All the same, I'm glad Alec's on the case. They crossed the Wickham Road and were halfway across Windsor End when the door of the Saracen's Head opened, and a very large man stepped out into the light from the lamp above. Spotting them, he stopped and held the door for them, raising his hat to reveal a hairless dome immediately bedewed with glinting raindrops. Isabel passed him with a nod of acknowledgement. Daisy paused with a smile. He winked at her. Wondering whether Tom had heard any new and useful rumours, she followed Isabel. They returned to the parlour, where they found Willie and Vera. With the burden of her secret lifted, Vera was a new person. She'd never have Willie's sparkle, or her drive to succeed, Daisy thought, nor the inner strength that enabled Isabel to cope calmly with what life threw at her. But Vera had a quiet charm that showed more clearly now that she wasn't living in fear. Daisy was glad for her. She had run out of steam, though, too tired to stay and celebrate with them. She turned down the offer of a drink and went upstairs. Her mind was restless and wouldn't let her fall asleep. Her friends seemed to have put behind them the horrible discovery in their cellar. Ought they to be worrying about D.I. Underwood? Had the inspector really concluded the murder had nothing to do with the present inhabitants of the house where it had occurred? Perhaps Alec would tell her whether they were still under suspicion. He might not, fearing that Daisy would warn them. And he might be right at that. She thought back over the past week. Nothing she'd seen or heard since arriving in Beaconsfield gave the slightest ground for suspecting any of the three women had the least idea a body was slowly decomposing in their cellar. Nothing in their characters gave the slightest grounds for supposing any of them capable of killing someone and concealing a guilty conscience for a month or so. Nor had they even the slightest hint of a motive for the murder. The legal papers had been signed. The house was theirs. Mrs. Gray couldn't have refused to vacate it. Nonetheless, doubtless all sorts of rumours about Willie, Isabel and Vera were flying round the town. Daisy wished she had been able to chat with Tom Tring, to ask him what was being said. As far as Daisy knew, the police had only two real suspects, and neither Vaughan nor Cartwright looked very promising. She was still awake when Alec came in.
Still awake, love.
Your powers of observation and deduction are astounding, darling. I'm not sleepy, just feeling a bit limp. He sat down on the bed and took her hand.
Not a relapse?
He asked anxiously. No, I haven't coughed once. I rather overdid things today, I suppose.
Won't you go home and let yourself be spoiled by Elsie and Mrs. Dobson? I have to go to London tomorrow. I could drive you, so you wouldn't have to tackle the train journey.
You're going up to town again? What for?
You won't let it go, will you?
Not as long as there's any chance of helping Willie and company. Did the super call you back?
No. It's an errand for Underwood. Do you remember Eric Bragg? I think you've met him.
Your friend from Manchester? The one whose Mancunian accent somehow survives at the Foreign Office? Oh, no. Don't tell me you've proved it's not Mrs. Grey and have to go looking for her on the continent.
No, no. We're about as sure as we can be, without finding her dentist, that it is her. Underwood, very properly, wants to know what her stepson's been up to recently.
I'd forgotten about him. He's at the F.O.
That would make things too simple. He's a diplomat. We can only hope Bragg knows, or can find out where he is and where he's been.
Surely they must keep track of their people. Though I expect there are still places where communication's pretty difficult. Parts of Africa, and China, and the northwest frontier, for instance. Well, give my regards to Mr. Bragg. You'll come back here when you've talked to him.
Eventually. I also have to call on the only friend of Judith Grey, whose name and address we found.
Who's probably on the Riviera waiting for her to turn up.
Very possible.
Unless she's actually already there. You said you can't find her dentist. What about her doctor? She didn't go to Dr. Barnes?
No, though Albert did.
Have you talked to Dr. Barnes about her? Mrs. Barnes didn't know her, but the doctor might have discussed her husband's illness with her, at least when he was dying. He might have a better idea of what she was like than anyone else you found.
Could be,
Alec said thoughtfully, taking off his jacket and tie.
He struck me as pretty shrewd. As far as I'm aware, Pennycook was told only to ask whether he was her practitioner. We ought to find out whether he saw enough of her to gain an impression of her character.
You see, Daisy crowed, I am sometimes helpful. Before he could retort, she went on. I saw Tom this evening.
You didn't?
Of course not, darling. He was coming out of the hotel, this hotel, as Isabel and I were going in.
Where on earth had you been?
Isabel had to tackle Mrs. Hedger about cleaning the cellar.
Don't tell me she needed your support to make a request of her own char.
Well, no, not Isabel, though she is a fearsome old woman.
She is indeed. You wanted to see for yourself.
And Sally did say her aunt respected people with posh voices. So when she adamantly refused Isabel, I tried Mother's voice on her. It didn't work. Meeting her made me very thankful for Mrs. Twickle, who's good-natured, even though Mrs. Dobson has to stand over her to keep her going. I still think Tom would be able to get round Mrs. Hedger.
You could be right. Any ideas yet on how to bring them together?
I've been too busy to think. Or thinking about other things. Do you still need her evidence?
At least as to the date she last saw Judith Grey. I should have pressed her harder on that question.
You'd think she'd remember, if only because she can't have been paid after that. Unless... I wonder whether Isabel paid her for the days she worked when no one was in residence.
Damn it, Daisy! I wish you'd thought of that before I started to undress.
He unbuttoned his pajama jacket.
I hope she's still up.
Darling, for pity's sake, it can wait till the morning, can't it? If Isabel paid, and if she remembers for how many days, she won't forget overnight.
I bet her household accounts are in perfect order, with Willie looking over her shoulder.
Bound to be. Daisy recalled with guilt her own accounts, left in Mrs. Dobson's hands, competent, fortunately, for close to a month now. So if Izzy's forgotten, she'll be able to look it up for you. In the morning, or as soon as she can get back into the house.
Good point. I'll pass it on to Underwood. You're in good form tonight.
Daisy smiled smugly. Thank you, kind sir.
What else have you been mulling in that overactive brain?
Whether D.I. Underwood, and you, for that matter, still suspect Willie and friends.
You know they can't be crossed off our lists until we have far more information. As far as I'm concerned, they're at the bottom. I can't speak for Underwood.
Who's at the top? Cartwright and Vaughan? And the stepson?
Yes, but we have nothing definite on any of them. What we need is a few good suspects.
He crossed to the window, opened the upper sash a few inches, and peered out into the darkness, as if he might spot the murderer lurking outside. It's early days yet, darling, Daisy consoled him. Come to bed. 22. Daisy was up in time to have breakfast with Alec, if only because arriving at the Foreign Office before 10 was pointless. None but lowly clerks and typists started work before that hour. The dining room was half empty, so Daisy and Alec had their choice of tables. Most of the occupants were already eating. Sally came in with a laden tray, delivered heaped plates to two solitary men, more toast to another, and hot water to a couple's teapot. Then she hurried over to say good morning to the Fletchers and take their order, as well as that of someone who had entered after them. On her way back to the kitchen, she cleared dirty dishes from three tables. "I'm glad I'm not a waitress," said Daisy. "She never stops running, and with those heavy trays. No wonder she wants to train as a typist." But by the time Sally returned with their food, the rush was over. She served the last comer first, so that she could talk for a few moments with Daisy and Alec.
"Miss Sutcliffe said to tell you, Mrs. Fletcher, she went to High Wycombe with Miss Chandler. She's got to find someone to clean up the cellar. I'm sorry Auntie is so disobliging."
"I don't blame her." Daisy looked at Alec. I hope the inspector said she could go ahead."
"He dropped in last night on his way to catch a train to tell her in person. The cellar can be dealt with once Ernie's looked over the place, but the rest of the house is still out of bounds. Miss Hedger, have you seen Sergeant Piper this morning?"
"He's already had his breakfast, sir, and a word with Miss Sutcliffe and the others. He asked me to tell you Miss Chandler gave him a number the inspector wanted. The number of a car, he said, that might be the one you've been looking for."
"A car?" Daisy recalled Willie memorizing the license plate number of a vehicle that had passed them at a dangerous speed the other evening. "If I'd known you were looking for it, I could have told you she knew."
"Might be,"
said Alec. "Whose car is it, darling?"
"That's what we want to find out."
Sally said hesitantly,
Mr. Piper, told me Miss Sutcliffe knows who owns a car, just like that one. I can't tell you, though, because he wouldn't tell me."
"I'm glad to hear he has so much discretion,"
Alec said dryly.
"He's gone off to the police station already. He's a hard worker."
"Yes, he is. Thank you, Miss Hedger."
Sally went off to answer a call from another table.
"Why do you want to know about that car?"
Daisy asked. He wasn't listening.
"Ernie? She called him Ernie?"
"Love at first sight."
"No, really, Daisy."
"Call it attraction at first meeting, then."
"If D.S. Piper's going to be mooning about instead of..."
"Darling, Ernie isn't the moony sort. He's much too serious about his work. It's time he settled down with a nice young woman, and Sally would be perfect for him. Now eat your breakfast before it gets cold." Applying herself to her bacon and scrambled eggs, she pondered Sally and Ernie's future. Alec ate half his meal before he spoke again.
I'm going to drive up to town, in case I have to chase the woman down.
Slightly confused,